Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
HQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
Okay, see, it's not really an intruder. Okay, well, okay, you're doing a good job. You're doing a great job. Good evening, and welcome once again to Madam Perry Salon. I am your host and cruise director, Madam Perry, but also known as Jennifer Perry. And, you know, it's like this show gets more and more fun for me and from the comments I get from everybody and the messages for you, too, which is exactly what I want. The last few weeks, in case you haven't gone back to download some, we see I've had Rudy Sarzo, who was a bassist for Quiet Riot, Blizzard of Oz. Who else? Whitesnake, fantastic guy. He was so entertaining. Rudy was on. I had Frank DeVille Greenville, who has written and produced work for Timbaland, Usher, Beyonce, and right now he's on tour with the Gap Band. Also, Heather Ash Amara, the Warrior Goddess. And coming up soon, let's see, tomorrow night, I've got Harvey J.K., and he'll be talking about his book, Fight for the Four Freedoms, and Brandi Blazak, who was on recently with his new book, Dreamweaver, The Dream Police. Randy Blazak will be co-hosting tomorrow night. That's going to be pretty cool, too. Also, let's see, who else have I got? Phoebe Legere coming up, Daryl Rhodes. It's just one cool person after another. And if you're listening tonight, you'll also know that I've got got Chasm Sultan, bassist for Meatloaf, and Todd Rundgren coming. But only if you're listening tonight will you know this, okay, because I'm not going to put that out yet. So tonight's guest, you probably know who it is, but let me tell you, he's an author. I tell you what, I'm going to read something about him, an introduction about this guest that was on another blog called The Big Thrill, talking about our guest tonight, Simon Wood. He says, Simon Wood is a born problem solver. As a petrochemical engineer, he was tasked with preventing oil rig leaks and keeping drinking water clean. As a race car driver and pilot licensed in two countries, he's generally expected to use his skills and instincts to avoid scenarios involving words like fiery and crash. And if you're hoping his resume will get any less interesting, I'm sorry to tell you that Wood, along with his wife, has done undercover work as a private investigator in Canada and Nevada. So, and that's from the bigthrill.org. And it just read too beautifully to leave it alone. And so naturally, when Simon Wood turned to writing, you knew. His man's got too much imagination and too many stories to draw on. And so tonight we're going to talk about his newest book, Deceptive Practices. Welcome, come on into Madam Perry's Salon, Simon Wood. Welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I'm delighted to have you. As you know, I hope you were warned that Madam Perry's Salon looks like the inside of Jeannie's bottle. So just find a nice, cushy place to sit. And did you bring your dachshund with you?
She is in the other room because she might get a little excited. So. The animal farm is all on the other side of a door, probably waiting.
I know, mine too. All right. Well, first of all, congratulations on your newest book, Deceptive Practices. I know it's going to be as popular or more than your previous. Definitely be a hit.
I hope so.
And it's just about hot off the press, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's been out about 3 weeks or something right now.
And deceptive practices. I understand that this book, and you'll explain it better, is about somebody who has a little problem. You know, they have a little problem in their home life, and they just need a little help sorting it out. Would you describe to us what it's about?
Yeah, there's a little advertising blurb that there's a fictional company called Infidelity Limited, and essentially their goal in life is to sort out people's problems. And they have a little blurb which is, do you have a cheating spouse? Has counseling failed? Want to get even? Then hire Infidelity Limited. They're sort of like a dark net company that if you've got a cheating spouse or a dodgy business partner, then you can hire them. And what they will do is they will try and knock some sense into them or physically. Or if that doesn't work, at least the problem goes away. But unfortunately, it's not all what it seems.
Okay. So this is about one specific person, mainly who hires this company, Infidelity Limited, and gets a little bit more than what she bargained for or thought she paid for.
Yeah, right. And so it's the story's about Olivia Shaw. She's been married, she's on her second marriage, and it's gone a little stale, and then she discovers that her husband is cheating on her. And so in a moment of weakness, her sister tells her about Infidelity Limited and hooks her up with them. But then in a couple of weeks' time, instead of her husband coming home with a black eye, the police knock on her door and tell her husband's dead. And then she suddenly finds out what infidelity is all about, and that she's actually one small cog in a giant Ponzi scheme.
Oh, I know I shouldn't laugh at that, but it's like it's sort of I don't know. I can so many of your books I can picture being a film being made by the Coen brothers.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's got that aspect to it. Okay, so. So she goes through that. Now, what kind of response have you had to deceptive practices so far?
A couple of people wish they were kind of real and a little bit more reputable than in the book. Some people have thought it's a little that it couldn't happen, but I'm actually one of those people that I skim newspapers for all those stories where they say they couldn't happen. You know, and I've just seen enough of these sort of stings where police officers go undercover and, you know, you've got the wife trying to hire somebody to, you know, kill their husband from, you know, out there, you know, out the back of Soldier of Fortune or something. And
yeah.
And so, you know, it's just sort of like taking it on a much more sort of, if you like, in some ways larger, but sometimes on a smaller level, of just taking that sort of like that kernel of an idea and just going, well, what, you know, how bad can we make this situation? And how can it be, have a little bit more, you know, extra rings to, you know, of hell to it? And so, you know, it was the idea of that I just didn't want this company just to be people who physically, you know, knock seven kinds of stuff out of your husband or your wife or your business partner or your wayward kid or whatever it is, and sort of, you know, suddenly you find that it's a much more complicated scheme. But yeah, I'm very much inspired by things that I read on page 32 of a newspaper that I think, oh, you know how this could be a lot worse. So I always think I like to err on the, you know, the improbable, but not the impossible.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, as I've told people, you know, sometimes with the things that you read like this, I said, this is no, it's little wonder we don't need or have the Weekly World News or the National Enquirer anymore in the U.S. because who needs it? The regular news is more bizarre than anything we used to, than Bat Boy or a tribe of people in Africa that look and dress like Elvis. You know, all the things that you used to see on there that was so bizarre. It's
Well, it's like all these different things. You kind of like someone will say, that could never happen. And I guarantee, like, 2 weeks later, something in a similar vein hits the news. Because I think with this one, you've kind of just had this, it's not quite the same, but it's that thing, I don't know if you've seen, where, like, the internet chat rooms, where, mm-hmm. you know, with like, the porn stars or whatever it is, and then what they're doing is they're turning their camera on and recording the person on the other side, the guy who's sort of like calling in, and then blackmailing them. They've had a couple of suicides and sort of thing, and it's just, you know, and they're like talking about that nobody should have their webcam camera exposed. I think if anyone saw the Mark Zuckerberg picture from a couple of months ago, even on his computer in Facebook, he had a piece of duct tape over the camera lens on his desktop. And you're like going, well, and I always think, oh, if they're doing that, then there must be the fear of something going wrong. And so, you know, that's where all these things start to fester for me for a story idea.
Yeah. Now, so it starts with things that you read that, like you said, you know, you want to get to where it's not impossible, you know, and just before it gets improbable. Or was that vice versa on that one?
No.
Totally. Okay. Okay. So let me ask you this then. Now, and we talked about this, you and I did, a long time ago on someone else's podcast, but in fact, I think it was Pam Stacks. Once you get this idea and then you take it a step or two further, and maybe a few more steps further, and it's, then you start to, and I don't know how your process is, but once you start to work out the logistics of how these things happen, I think we were talking about how you know, you've gotten on the bus before or something to see how long it would take to go here to find a place to bury a body, or how do you work it out to make sure it rings true and it's real?
I am very much, I remember in college, a teacher said I was very empirically minded, and he was basically moaning because I wouldn't believe it unless I could prove it, you know, firsthand. And so I do very much sort of like walk the steps of all the characters, and so like for this book, this is actually the fourth book in what I called the Bay Area Quartet, where I divided the Bay Area into four quarters, and this book's the last one is in the East Bay where I live. And so I put a number of little places. I needed like secret meeting places for things to take place. And so I used like the top of Mount Diablo, which has like a little eco center at the top and a little shop and things. And so I went up there on midweek and there's like nobody up there. And it's, you know, and I will do it at the times that it takes place in the story. It's like, if I want to see what it's like at 3 a.m. in the middle of Oakland in downtown, I'll go down there and just see what mm-hmm. happens for half an hour.
Okay. excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt. I want you to keep going with this, but we have a caller in the line, too, for you. And also, if you want to call in and ask a question of Simon Wood or just talk to him, the number is 646-716-9922. So I'm going to go to the caller. Welcome to Madame Perry's Salon, and talk with Simon Wood, and just come in and introduce yourself, please.
Hi, this is Becky Kyle. You
Hi.
Are fascinating me with the research part of it. I'm a librarian, so the idea of walking the steps and going Oakland at 3 a.m., what happens in downtown Oakland at 3 a.m.?
You know what it is? It just depends. I threw that one out as a hypothetical, but I have just like gone and sat somewhere and just had
mm-hmm.
a look. And, you know, I've done the thing where I'll ride the bar and
mm-hmm.
at certain times. I wanted to see if I could drop whether my cell phone would keep working for
mm-hmm.
a book. It's whatever it is in the story that I want to use. that I'll actually go and do that. And sometimes you'll sort of see things where literally nothing will happen. You'll sit there and you won't see a person on the street. And then you're going, well, this works and it doesn't work for what I'm trying to do. If I say nothing happens down here, I can pretty much say with some conviction it doesn't. Or if I think the one I wanted for one story, I wanted to have a character killed on the Embarcadero. And I just walked, because I wanted it to happen in plain view in front of tourists and things. But I wanted no one to notice. And it became pretty obvious I could not make that happen. It was just impossible for me to try and do anything without being spotted.
I don't know about that, though. People may look, but they don't necessarily see.
Well, that was the other half of that. The beginning was wherever I went, I was. It's that thing of like it's not dense enough in places, so you kind of stand out if you try to do something. And then in other places, it's too dense. So what I ended up doing was going around to Fort Mason around the corner, and it was sort of like kind of the spot I was looking for, and I let off a firecracker because I wanted a gunshot to be heard in plain, you know, in public, and everybody stopped, then everybody carried on walking, and that was what I wanted, and so I moved it down the road a bit to sort of Fort Mason because, you know, because I think it's that thing of like, you know, you're like, I'll know a gunshot when I hear it. And you kind of like go through, is it a firecracker? Is it a gun? Is it a backfire? And what am I supposed to do about it anyway? And so people kind of just acknowledged it but did not want to follow up on it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because, well, it is really hard to tell the difference. I mean, I don't know whether a ballistic expert could actually tell you under certain conditions which one it was.
Yeah, and the other thing is, how many of us have really heard one on a regular basis?
Gunfire?
It's not going to be someone can, you know, listen and go, oh, that's a 9mm. I don't think that's like general knowledge amongst the average public in most places. So you get that little bit of benefit of the doubt on your side when you want it for your characters.
That makes sense. Well, do you know people that are experts in certain fields that you can call on?
I won't say that I know people, but I am sort of – the other thing that I like to do is first-hand interviews. So I will just, like, go, I need to know about guns. I need to know about parole. I need to know about medications. And I'll just sort of like knock on people's doors and sort of find my way. The nice thing I've done with like Facebook is you get a nice, because I've got a sort of like a decent sort of following on there, I will usually put out questions. Does anybody know anything about insurance investigation? And then someone goes, oh, well, my brother-in-law does. And you start things off like that. So that's where I sort of like use social media for my side. But I love to interview people, talk to people, because usually something pops out of it that won't be in a written statement or in a book or, you know, that I would research. It's usually people's little personal anecdotes about their job, their profession, or how they go about their job that kind of falls out. And you think, oh, that would be a really good, you know, character trait, character flaw, little piece of business that you can insert into the story, and things like that.
That makes a lot of sense. That those are the bits that make it real, too.
Yeah. Because like one little bit that I got... sorry?
Oh, no, go ahead.
One little bit I got was my sister took a self-defense class in England, and the one problem is anything like mace is considered an offensive weapon. It's in the same class as a switchblade. So the police, she did the self-defense class, and they said, and what you really want to carry on you at all times is like extra hold hairspray.
Absolutely.
And it goes, if you spray it, it'll burn just as much as sort of like, you know, CS gas or, you know, pepper spray or anything like that. And they said, and I said, who was teaching? They said, a police officer. And the police, and they sort of said to the police officer, said, why is it, do you say hairspray? He goes, well, if you've got hairspray on you, I won't question it. If you've got mace on you, I will.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was a nice little piece of information, how a police officer does not want to prosecute someone who is using it in self-defense, but, you know, it was a nice workaround.
The old final net, that'll kill you. Well, I knew somebody that kept bug spray near the doors of her home, and, you know, what do you say? You live in Texas. You have bug spray.
Yeah, I can see it. I've always thought in England, how many baseball bats are bought in England and how many people use them for baseball?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm thinking it's probably about a 99% to people who don't use it for baseball.
Or golf clubs, you know, go to a thrift store and buy, you know, a broken set of, a poor piece of a golf club set that, you know, a nice driver that you can whack somebody with, you know, keep it by your door.
Thank you. Sounds like you've been working on this.
Oh, I used to know somebody that did that.
Okay.
Well, no, the bug spray.
I don't even have all that kind of stuff going on, so go ahead.
Yeah, well, no, I used to know somebody that taught self-defense and also was an ex-police officer and talked about, you know, the workaround. That, you know, the final net, I figured that one out on my own. Just, you know, well, we know how much I enjoy being a girl. Not some days. And, you know, accidentally hitting yourself in the face with it and thinking, this is a whole lot worse than mace.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I know when I'm trying to leave the hair salon, you know, it's like, oh, God, get me out of here while I can still see. So, yeah,
mm-hmm.
But who would be like, oh, you were this, you know, like, it's not a weapon. Like mace would be like maybe you were the one that should be talked to. Well, now, does this mean, Simon, that if you're checking out with people, like if you put something out on Facebook or social media, and I've seen you do that, does anybody know anything about this? Does that mean that you don't have to put as much into, say, into Google or Yahoo as I can see Simon Wood sitting at home going, how long would it take to kill somebody via hairspray or something?
No, I still bung things into Google, and I think it's one of those things that pretty much any writer who writes mysteries, thrillers, or horror or something has probably got the worst internet search history on the planet.
Oh, yeah. The NSA is after you.
Yeah, and I almost feel like we need a badge, you know, like a thing that, you know, gets you out of it. Like, you know, like you get pre-check for airlines and stuff, is you need some sort of protection on that. But it's just one of those things that you kind of even like weird things. Like my wife was going, oh, look, there's like a local butcher that does butchery classes.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of like going, oh, I wonder if you could like do that for a body. And so there's like an idea for a short story that I'm sort of like have written on my little wall, which is a guy who takes all these little store classes and things like that to commit a crime. And one of them is his butchery class to help him dispose of the body and all these other sort of like, you know, things that look innocent on the surface, but, you know, you can use them to whatever means you, and ends you want.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I think, because I think I mentioned to you there was a, before, a few, about a couple of years ago when I talked to you, there was a Patricia Highsmith short story about a man, a writer who does that, and he does all this stuff to try to see how long it takes to bury a body, wrapped up in carpet, whatever. And then when his wife disappears, because it turns out she's just left him, then everybody starts going through it. Well, I saw him out with a roll of carpet digging up and holding, burying it last week and so forth. So I would imagine that you would need some kind of, I would think that you'd have to get a new hard drive every 2 weeks, Simon. I'm just saying. Just
Bain Publishers has a author search engine that you can log into, and you use that as an author that you don't have to use the NSA.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of there is some little places you can kind of log into, but I don't really worry about it because I can kind of, if anyone ever knocked on the door and said, you know, why have you got this sort of random collection of your search history, I kind of think I could talk my way out of it. And the other thing is you've kind of met people from various lines of federal government and state government that I've kind of got their phone numbers, and I'd probably call them and say, help.
Just hand them a book or two and say, well, you want to read this?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it ends up being the Sharon Stone defense from Basic Instinct sort of thing. It's like, it's easier once you've got a book. It's harder when you don't have that book and you're working on the first one and you're trying to explain how you want to know how this works or that works. And trust me, I'm a writer kind of thing.
You know, this, and if you're just tuning in, my guest is Simon Wood, and our pal author Becky Kyle is here too, and we're talking about his newest book, Deceptive Practices. And just to read you the blurb that the main character reads to start off the things, she reads an ad that says, "Do you have a cheating spouse? Has counseling failed? Want to get even? Then hire Infidelity Limited to teach them a lesson." That's the pitch Olivia Shaw bought into. When her husband is killed, I knew you'd like that, Becky. When her husband is killed, she discovers that Infidelity Limited is a far more dangerous thing than she has ever believed. Now, the prime suspect in her husband's slaying, she has only one option: to take down Infidelity Limited, which would be a pretty big job. And if you want to talk to Simon Wood, the number is 646-716-9922. So... What are you saying? What's so funny, Becky? They're in the people pleasing business. What are you talking? Infidelity Limited. They provide a service. They're a solutions provider.
No, dude, I'd call it Infidelity Unlimited.
Oh, okay. No, I think that was that Ashley website that was discovered last year or early this year.
Ashley Madison.
Yeah,
that actually that one case actually changed the title of the book because it originally was going to be called Infidelity Limited, and the Ashley Madison thing sort of popped up, and it was like we did a title change. But again, you know, that's another sort of thing of like, you know, we were, you know, it was one of those things that. You would say doesn't exist, and you know there it is with 5 million odd people.
Oh yeah, I mean, just when you think you've got it made, it's somebody's actually thought about it, and
yeah.
Well, and some of these things that happen in real life, you're kind of like, you think, oh, I could write about that, and nobody would believe it.
No, I tend to actually tone down any kind of real life instances that I've personally had, or you know, sort of like had, you know, with in life. And it's like, you know, if I put this in a book, no one would believe it. It's just too sort of daytime soap opera story twist kind of thing.
I like this. This is on Simon Wood's website, which if you want to look it up, it's simonwood.net, and it's got all kinds of good stuff in it, and it's a great website. But this top of it starts with, it says, the USA Today bestselling author of The One That Got Away in his latest story, Deceptive Practices. I got to read this first two sentences. It says, described as a dark, demented angel by author Ken Bruin, Simon Wood has built a reputation for concocting wild and dangerous thrillers that would have given Hitchcock nightmares. His writing takes an even darker and stranger turn as as Simon Janice's horror fiction identity, which I haven't read any of your horror books yet. But, yeah, how do you feel? The Dark Demented Angel. I mean, how do you feel about that description? Oh, you put it on your website. You must feel pretty good about it. But were you surprised?
Well, it's eye-catching. I think it's something that when I did sort of like my engineering, and because I designed sort of either safety systems or things that were essentially the last line of defense, you get into a mindset of taking any situation and then having to think of what are the perils, pitfalls, and disasters that can happen on the simplest of, you know, systems, scenarios. And so you get into that sort of mindset of like going, oh, well, this would be a start off for a bad day, and here's another 5-6 levels of disaster that could happen. And it's just kind of, as much as engineer is pretty much divorced from, if you like, creative writing, it's not in some ways in that it gave me a great basis for looking on the bleakest side of life and everything else that goes along with it.
Okay, I need to stop just 1 minute here, you guys, if you'll let me. I've got a new sponsor tonight that I need to give a big shout out to. I think your mics are still hot. So for everyone else listening, if you're enjoying Simon Wood and Becky Kahn with me here on Madame Perry Salon, just stay with us. I also want to tell you about something else. Do you want to learn how to flip houses for big chunks of cash? Well, let me tell you about a podcast that gives you the most practical information you can get. Flipper Bill Hawthorne has flipped over 100 properties and loves to give away his secrets in each episode. Now, every show lets you peek behind the curtain and get practical information on how the industry really works so you too can make some extra income. The name of the show is Flipping Houses for Rookies, and you can find it, Flipping House for Rookies, on iTunes, Stitcher, Google iTunes, or you can just go to flippinghouses.club/podcast. And I'm telling you, Bill Hawthorne, he's known as the deal maker, and he's going to give you all the scoop. And if you're looking at this on the Blog Talk Radio page, first of all, if you're listening tonight live, please click on the follow button so you can follow and help me get even more cool people like Simon Wood. But also, I've got here the link to Simon Wood's website, as well as the website for Flipping Houses for Rookies podcast. And on Twitter, they're Flipping Houses 3, just the number 3. Okay, so check that out. But if you happen to find a dead body in that house, it might have something to do with Simon Woods. Let's get back to him. Simon.
Yes, what can I do for you?
Now, your book, The One That Got Away, has been optioned for a movie adaptation. So, as
they
say, how cool is that?
Say that again.
I said, how cool is that? Is there?
I try not to get too excited about it because it's, you know, there's a lot of steps where, you know, they can change their mind or, you know, it may not come off. I have a good feeling about the people who are making it or trying to make it. I know that they've had screenplays commissioned and done, and I think the make or break for the movie will be in the next 6 months. Hopefully they'll get everything aligned and it'll be off to the races, but it'll be exciting if it comes all the way. But I know that there's so many different little steps and levels that they have to go through, but we've gone through two or three of them already, so hopefully we'll keep on climbing.
Well, we'll be certainly pulling for you and thinking good thoughts, lighting candles, and as Adina says on AvFab, chanting as we speak, darling, chanting as we speak. So we'll keep the good vibes, won't we, Becky?
You bet.
Now, you also have some interesting stories I wish you would share with us about when you were a competitive race car driver. I know you're a pilot, an endurance cyclist. give me, isn't there a story, I think, when you were cycling? Now, as an endurance cyclist, what does that mean for somebody like me that doesn't know?
Well, I do things like one day sort of events like you would see on like the Tour de France, but instead of it being over weeks and weeks, I tend to do little one day events. So they may be anything from 60 miles to 100 miles sort of here in Northern California. And so I tend to do all these long distance rides and try and survive them.
And try to survive them. Have you ever had a chance where you, or a situation where you thought you weren't going to survive one? I mean, does that?
No, the only things that I've ever had is I'd actually come off my bike and I was a few months early and I just wasn't, had enough fitness, and it was like a 110 degree day and I just crapped out about halfway through and just said, I just need to go home now. The only other times is it can be, it's going uphill's fine. Sometimes going downhill's the scarier side. And I got a double flat coming down a mountain, and I basically just had to guide the bike straight at a tree and grab the tree before I went off the side of the mountain. So I took a wind in, but that was a lot better than the alternative.
Holy crap.
Now, is that the one you tell me where you were sort of, what was the one where you were on a, you were on a line between like a county and a city, a jurisdiction? This might have been in France.
Oh, yeah.
Where everybody it was kind of, yeah.
It was more that I was actually, I used to ride to work years ago. I don't have a day job anymore. But when I did, I used to ride, and I was hit by a car, and I landed on a city-county line. And there was three agencies arguing over whose responsibility it was to take care of it, because no one wanted to take care of it. And it was things like what direction he was, where did he land. And eventually I got up and left and went to hospital. And in the end, it was CHP. It was CHP's responsibility. And they tracked me down and they chewed me out for leaving the scene of a crime or scene of an accident. So it's just that thing. I think the thing that's tough for me as being a foreigner here is that sort of decentralized government, because there's only one police force in the UK, whereas, you know, there's dozens and dozens and everything's replicated. And it sort of works against you. And I've actually used sort of jurisdictional issues in stories, because it's a thing of like, if you commit your crimes and acts in different counties and different cities, you know, there's no sort of sharing of crime. So, you know, things can not stack up than where it would, if you like, in back home, where it'd be on a, you know, be recorded on a national level, whereas here, you know, it gets recorded by little fiefdoms, and there's ways of making your crimes drop through the cracks.
Boy, that's the truth.
I don't know if anyone's watching the thing about the Long Island, is it Long Island serial killer? They had a thing on, I think it was either A&E or AMC. And that was kind of that situation, because they had some of the bodies on one side, which made it, I think, a New Jersey jurisdiction. Another part was Suffolk County. Another one was a different county. And, you know, they have to investigate what's on their land, as it were. And so, you know, it basically distracts the story and helps the crime. I once listened to somebody who was part of the task force that took down the Unabomber, and essentially it was the post office investigators who pretty much nailed him.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody else was so sort of having to work their side, you know, their particular side of the street, that ended up being, you know, the post office that got the break that ended up making initial headway for him. So it's the U.S. is a very interesting creature to deal with from a writing point of view, because no two counties operate the same way, no two cities operate the same way in their in what they do, because they have different complexions on, you know, what their population is, what their how big the land is, you know, because you can have a lot of population but in a very small place, or you can have a small population spread out over a large landmass. And so, you know, how law enforcement or how laws and how things are, you know, how basically government keeps the lights on the country varies so wildly from location to location, which makes it a little bit harder for me when I want to research something, but gives me an awful lot of opportunity for playing with stories.
Well, that's and I read a lot of true crime too, and I know that there's sometimes agencies won't share when it's important information that should be shared. They won't share with each other, whether it's like a state bureau of investigation as well as maybe a city police or county or you know, nobody wants to share because everybody wants to hog the glory and make the collar or whatever when they could.
Well, it's not even just that side of it. It's just the fact that if you get. Say 15 carjackings in Reno, there's nothing for Reno to report that MO or that situation nationally, where, you know, it could be then when someone looking up in Lake Tahoe or in Truckee or in Oregon somewhere, or you know, somewhere like Medford in southern kind of Oregon, no one can look up and see, oh, there's a pattern, this isn't just happening here. You know, this MO is spread over more than just a city. You know, it can spread over state lines, can spread over county lines. There's no sort of like kind of national reporting I think it's voluntary, but not on a compulsory level. And so again, you know, that's how crimes can slip through the cracks. If you're mobile enough, and we live in a time where it's easy to move, then, you know, it becomes a harder thing to discover.
Well, and it's not just that. I mean, so many of the law enforcement agencies are understaffed, underpaid, and you know, underserved as far as a communication infrastructure just on their own.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. Yeah.
Try to work for, like, the state police or someplace like that and keep the computers running.
Yeah, and it's always one of those things that I would, you know, I would love, even if we couldn't have a national police force, is that you would have a statewide police force that would, because at least you can get, if you like, the economies of scale that, you know, you can, instead of each jurisdiction reinventing the wheel from a forensics department or, an informational, you know, data information sort of level, at least, you know, you would have a bit more of a spread of information.
Because, you know, like county coroners may see a certain type of case once a year. And a state coroner would, if they reviewed it, would see it quite a bit more frequently and know how to deal with it.
Yeah, there was a weird, and that always slightly throws me to a certain extent. I know that, you know, smaller jurisdictions can appeal to their state or their, you know, even to the sort of the feds to sort of like say, you know, we're not equipped to deal with this, will you take this case over? But I did watch one little true crime story, and it was the fact that no one in the police department, I think, had never investigated a murder case.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it was a small town, never had that kind of history, so no one ever had that kind of background. And it kind of, you know, and the police department didn't make a secret of it. It was essentially a private eye had been hired who was an homicide detective, pretty much took over their case for them.
Mm-hmm.
As wild as that sort of seems. And this is where I kind of, like, you know, will cherry pick these kind of ideas for stories. And I know some people say, well, that won't happen. It's like, well, it may not happen in your jurisdiction, but it does happen differently all across the country, because the way that the U.S. is put together is more of a jigsaw than, you know, one harmonious kind of mechanism.
Exactly right. I mean, there is a spot where you can step in the middle of the road. You've seen that, what is it, the Geico commercial?
Yeah,
where,
yeah.
Where it's Tennessee or Virginia. You know, just step one foot and there you are.
Yeah, I used to work in city government here in California, and the city I worked in, on one side of the city where it met the next one, essentially the front half of your house was in one town and the back half of your house was in the next, because the where the line was drawn, and that just seemed crazy. That seemed even worse than the Geico ad, where down the middle of the street is, you know, a split in the state. But I can just imagine, because you're on the hook for two sets of local property tax.
Oh, sure.
You're in two jurisdictions.
Yeah, sewer, water, garbage collection.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You know, well, the garbage and the sewer was in one city, but your no, the sewer was in one jurisdiction, but your electric and your garbage was in the other. You know, and that's just a horrible scenario. And it's like, who drew these lines?
Well, I live in a neighborhood where we had an emergency fire call. Every smoke alarm in the house went off at once at 4 a.m. It was a false alarm, but we ended up with the city and the county fire departments coming, two jurisdiction fire departments coming, because they really didn't know which one we were. And it's nice to know that they both came instead of sitting, you know, back at dispatch and everybody arguing about it.
Yeah, my wife had that once. She just saw a fire, and she just saw the fire truck. They were like parked in a, you know, a shopping mall. And she goes, "There's a fire over there." And they're going, "Do you know whether it's city or county?" And it's like, "Well, I don't know, but maybe you want to give a call." And it's just a weird sort of weird situation there. But an old apartment block I lived in, here in California, half of it's in the county, half of it's in the town.
Listen, if you're listening live right now or just tuning in, this is Madame Perry Salon. I am thrilled to have suspense author Simon Wood here, talking about his newest book, Set to Practices, and also how I think he's given us a few hints on how we can practice to deceive, but I'm not sure that was the intention. Also here with us in the studio is author, prolific author, Becky Kyle, and pick up her latest book, Fanny and Dice. I love that book. But we have a comment here from, let's see, our dear pal. Okay, he says you address, well, no. We have a question here messaged in from our beloved friend, David Hurley. Love him. He's an author, poet, and he's a publisher of Subtlety Magazine. And David says, he has a question for you, Simon. He said, if you ever write a memoir or autobiography, its title needs to be Dark Demented Angel, as you've been called by Ken Bruin. Says, I like your alter ego author name, Simon Janus, a nod to the two-faced Roman god, I assume. What
yes.
is it? Oh, okay. What is it? What is different or more twisted about books by Janus rather than Wood?
I think the reason I did the two names was I was causing a little bit of confusion for myself. You know, some readers would sort of viewed me as a horror writer, some readers viewed me as a thriller writer, and then they put the books down because they didn't quite know what they were getting. So, you know, I stuck with my own name for the thrillers, and I came up with my two-faced name for the horror side. And I kind of thought about, you know, what is the distinction? And I think with the thriller side, the Simon Wood side, the stories usually involve disasters of the lead character's own making. They're usually slightly culpable for the for the adventures that they go on for the next, you know, 300 pages or whatever. With the horror side, I think it's more, I pick on innocence. These are people usually have got, haven't done anything wrong, but they are sucked into, you know, a darker world that they, you know, didn't sign up for, and it's usually no fault of their own.
Okay, so thank you, David.
I'm a little
Rowley,
Nina in my horror identity.
that's why you have to have a different one. That's like when I wrote when I write my blog, Memoirs of a Misanthrope, and they're all true stories. And some people think it's funny, and some people say you're mean. But I just kind of keep that as another little alter ego. I think that was a great way to describe the difference, is that with the Simon Wood, the lead character is somewhat culpable for what happens to them. I won't give away what happens, but there's a story where, and forgive me, I've read so many of your books that I forget what the titles are, but the guy whose wife decides she's going to move her parents in with them, and the husband says, there's no way this can happen.
Oh, yeah, it's a short story. It's in Asking for Trouble. I call that story? Let me just pull it out.
Because I know the first thing is...
Oh, Making Ends Meet, that story is called.
Yes. Making Ends Meet, and the... doesn't want it. I can see, you know, I told my husband, nobody moves in with us once we buy a house. Nobody. I don't know about you, Becky, but I said, nobody else moves in. That's when trouble starts.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, but with this one, the man, I will say the man, first of all, when his wife is set on having her parents move in, and his father-in-law was so overbearing, it's that he tries to kill them, and he ends up killing the wrong couple, so where does he go next? You know, it's just like, it just seems to go on. These things just, like, take on a life of their own for this poor guy, and you feel for him so much, and, let's see. Another book I like now, Terminated, was the first book. Was the first Simon Wood book I read was Terminated, and oh my gosh, there have been true crime stories that have started like that.
It's a book all about workplace violence, and I kind of got drawn into that topic. Because I'm very sort of topic driven. There's, you know, each of the books have got something to it that was based on some sort of issue or thought or scenario. And Terminated was workplace violence, and that cropped up in my wife's old job from a couple of jobs ago, where she got a promotion and then she was handed a thing and said, "Oh, by the way, we're investigating so and so because he's made a violent threat. But you can't say anything. We've got private security doing, you know, background and stuff, and it won't affect you. It'll all be gone by the time you take over." And it was kind of a weird sort of situation, because it was very off the books kind of stuff they were doing with this. It wasn't public knowledge that they had this private security company that did all these things and offered protection and all these other stuff. And so it just made me look into the area, and I found out sort of like basically 20 people were killed at murdered at work a week. And it's sometimes,
many,
you know, it's
how many,
people,
whoa, back
20
that
a week.
Simon. Wow.
Yeah, it's 20 people a week. But it's a little bit of a bit of a nebulous number, because it's a thing of not just from your co-worker. You know, the threat can come from, you know, the person sitting opposite you, or it's an outside threat of someone trying to attack you, attack the company. So, like, when that guy flew his plane into the IRS building, because, you know, that's one side of it. The other side of it is, you know, the guy, I think there was a brewery, and there was a bad joke that was allowed to fester and fester, and the company told the guy to walk it off. In the end, one day he came in with a shotgun and took out four of the workers over it. And so that's one side of it. But the other side of it is also included in that number is kind of like the convenience store things where, a robbery goes wrong. Those things are included in that number. But, you know, I found a great government website just from Googling, which listed, you know, how many people died a year or were killed a year by job type, by gender, and sort of things like that. And you kind of felt, you kind of saw that, you know, over half of people murdered at work are women in retail. And retail is a very sort of wide ranging thing, from like Macy's to 7-Eleven and everything else in between, down to, you know, the job where you least likely to be murdered was a coal mine. Statistically, they have one murder at a coal mine every year since like 1963 or something. But there are other job associated issues that you need to be concerned about, but at least, you know, that was the safest job to have. But, you know, it was just suddenly that, and then I started researching real life stories of, you know, of various sort of workplace violence stories, and usually just found that it was usually something very small that never went away. It was that drip on the forehead of the person who's been offended. And it just sort of like comes back. But also it's that thing of like, how well do you know the person that you sit next to at work?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was, you know, in a lot of those cases, they were people who were just one, you know, one little tiny thing away from breaking anyway. You know, they had other issues in their life and, you know, whatever was going on in their job life, it was that one thing too much. And so it was just an interesting topic to explore and play with.
Wow. Yes, that is so true. And I can imagine you could do a whole series on that, on workplace murder. So, Simon, are you on tour with this? Getting back to your new book, Deceptive Practices, are you on tour? Are you on a book signing tour right now, or...?
I've just been mainly doing a cyber one these days. I tend to do an awful lot of stuff online now to show where I am, whether it's, you know, a public thing like this or whether it's private groups. But I don't travel as much as I used to.
Okay. So. Why not? We might want to see you around the country. Becky might want to see you in Tennessee. I might want to see you in Atlanta or Asheville.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that it's a long, hard slog doing it. I once did one book tour where I did it where I always came home at weekends, and it took, you know, on and off, it took, I think, like 3 months. And then with another thriller writer, we said we would do that, and we basically went on the road for, I think, like 28 days, and we did a bunch of stores and like groups and clubs, and it was just a real hard slog sort of thing, and it's just really hard because you can't get everywhere at once. You know, it's one of the downsides of the U.S. is that thing of trying to hit all the different pockets and things is, if I had a few more air miles, then I'd maybe be able to do it.
Well, the difference is, you know, it's 100 miles is like 1,000 to somebody that I've got it totally reversed, but distances are so compressed in Europe. And time is so, you know, you're used to going to some place that's a century or more old, and that's an old building here, and we're used to going 1,000 miles, and that's not a big trip, whereas it is to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things of, I think the distance from London to Paris is less than 200 miles, and there's water in between. And so you can get, if you like, a lot of out of your promotional mile Whereas, you know, here it's a thing of, and you know what the real big thing is, more like coordination, because some instead of being able to get a nice daisy chain where you can work from, you know, Washington State down the coast into the Southwest and over, it's usually somebody wants you to double back and do something here, and it's real is a sort of Berlin airlift to try and get all your dates to line up so that you can do it in one nice you know, daisy chain of events.
Well, we're certainly glad, and I am so grateful that you came here to Madame Perry's Salon, because I'm such a fan, and I just wanted to have you on here for so long with the new book, The Set of Practices. It's a great time, and I thank you so much, Simon, and I hope you'll come back.
Yeah, anytime.
All right, great. So, once again, thanks to tonight's sponsor, Flipping Houses for Rookies podcast. And you can get the you can get the link to click on right here on the page or on Madame Perry Salon page on Facebook. And Simon Wood, Becky Kyle, get her book, Fanny and Dice, and follow Becky Kyle. You know she's my buddy, and she's a great writer. And don't forget her book. Oh, Simon, you'd be interested in this because you're an animal rescuer. Becky put together a book, Tales from the Frontline. And Becky, can you give us in two sentences what it's about?
Sure. Tales from the Front Lines is a collection of short stories that was written to benefit TADSAW, a group that provides service dogs for wounded warriors and emergency service workers with PTSD, because a service dog can reduce their medication load by half and get them out in the public, whereas therapy takes a whole lot longer.
All right. Good. And so well, I usually have that show. We show that every now and then on Madame Perry Salon page on Facebook. So Simon Wood, get his books, anything, Working Stiffs, Accidents Waiting to Happen, Paying the Piper, Terminated, Asking for Trouble, All Fall Down, The One That Got Away, and especially his newest, freshest book, hot off the press, Deceptive Practices, or his books under the name of Simon Janis, and his website, which is also called Simon Wood's Web Hideout, at simonwood.net. And you heard it right here. He promises to come back. Simon Wood, we love you. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks very much for having me. Bye.